This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade. Right now, I'm digging into the history of incredible infrastructure projects of the 1930s, including the Hoover Dam, the Empire State Building, the Golden Gate Bridge, and more. The promise is in the title, History That Doesn't Suck. Available on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We got to talk about the dogs and what's going on. Big, big decisions going down today. It is Dukes and Bell. We're going to talk more about our Braves who won a game against the Dodgers last night. It was good. But as Mike and I have been talking about, we are not as good as they are right now. And that's fine. We've got time to grow and get better, and we're going to get some players back. We'll talk to Grant McCauley coming up about that as well. And also more NFL news to get to as, believe it or not, man, some of the workouts and things are starting to happen. The offseason is going to fly by. I'm telling you guys, it's going to be gone before you know it.
Right. And we talked about it earlier, some audio that got released and Pro Football Talk, other sites had it, of the Eagles war room on draft night and kind of going, why can't we get a trade going here in the back of the first round? Because find out what we were offering for Pierce Jr. We'll talk more about that
too. All right, man. Right now, let's talk some dogs. Connor Riley is here from Dog Nation. Connor, do we know anything before this official announcement comes down from the number one quarterback in the country? I mean, Jared Curtis is going to make his decision today, but do we have a sense of where this is going?
This is as tight-lipped as a recruitment has been in a while. It is between Georgia and Oregon. He has made a commitment video, but he has actually made two commitment videos, one for Georgia, one for Oregon, as we are quite literally in the 11th hour when it comes to the status of Jared Curtis. It's still between Georgia and Oregon. Going into today, I would lean Georgia a little bit just because they have the longest standing relationship with Curtis, offering him a scholarship in January of 2023. And then also the distance factor when it comes to the family of Athens being much closer to Nashville, where Curtis is from and making his announcement, than Eugene, Oregon is.
I was talking with Carl earlier today about one of your colleagues at Dog Nation, Brandon Adams, was talking about on a podcast, Connor, that Juju Lewis, when he decommitted from USC, he later goes to Colorado. He was kind of in for Georgia. It was almost like he was there the same weekend that Jared Curtis was there for the Tennessee game, and he was kind of back to being a free agent, as it were. Did his father say in the comments that, hey, I want my kid to start. I don't want to wait 3 years like Carson Beck. You think that alienated Kirby and the coaching staff?
You know, I think that Georgia wants things to be a specific way when it comes to their quarterback and development. And look, with Jared Curtis, even with him being the number one quarterback in the country, he's not the type of player that's going to come in and start right away. The competition in Nashville that he faces, quite frankly, is pretty poor. And so there's going to be an adjustment period there for him. And he doesn't expect to come in and start right away. I think the thing that where it starts to get interesting is, okay, what happens when, you know, you get to the end of year two, you get to the end of the year three, and are you seeing the field? You know, Arch Manning at Texas, I think, is a great current example of this where, you know, he did not really start until coming into this 2025 season, but he was a backup this past year, and because of an injury to Quinn Ewers, he got put in there, made some starts during the course of the season. He was willing to wait until that third year. I think the question becomes, is everyone willing to do that? Because obviously the goal is to get to the NFL, and the track record of success that guys have with just 1 year of starting experience is incredibly poor. And so you need multiple years of starting experience. And so the best way to do that is to play early in your time at college. So it's going to be interesting, especially for Georgia that has shown a patience and a willingness to wait till guys are really further along the development curve, as opposed to some schools like you saw with Tennessee and Nico Iamaleava, who, you know, rode the bench year one. That was sort of the plan. Starts year two, didn't maybe make the big leap that so many expected. Now he wants to renegotiate and get paid more going into year three, and he ultimately ends up transferring to UCLA and just sort of washing away Tennessee's plan for the last 3-4 years at the quarterback position. Mm.
What about Bo Bentley, the kid out of Salina High School north of Dallas? If Jared decides he's going to Oregon, okay, does that mean that is the next guy that they're going after? We do know, right, that Mike Bobo went and visited this young man too, right?
Yeah, you know, both Oregon and Georgia have made some contingency plans in the event that they don't end up landing a Jared Curtis. For Georgia, Bo Bentley is that top target right now. Out of Salina, Texas, played much better competition than Curtis did. The biggest difference that Bentley is not the same level of recruit. It just comes down to size. He's listed at 6'1", 200. There are Stetson Bennett vibes in terms of play style that you sort of get from Bentley. And just given the Curtis recruitment that's been a five-star, that he was a one-time Georgia commit and then decommitted and sort of the noise that has come with it, I think there is a sect of Georgia fans out there that are like, hey, we'll take the kid in Bentley who seems to really fit the culture that Georgia has built and cultivated on competition and just wants to sort of keep their head down and work. Mm. I think Curtis is a guy who has a much higher upside, but you see a lot in what Georgia likes in Bentley. And if they do end up missing out on Curtis and they end up going all in on Bentley, I think they'd be very happy with either quarterback.
I mean, for everything I've read, as Connor Riley, guys from Dog Nation, joins us, you know, Jared Curtis was on the hook and everything seemed like it was hunky-dory. And then all of a sudden, and you know, Kirby's still talking to him. I saw some of the sound bites where, you know, he's talking about his interaction with the coaching staff and being comfortable there. And the night that I mentioned that Vols game when they were in Athens, you know, just talking with the coach, not even talking football, Carl, just talking, you know, conversation-wise. So with all due respect, and I don't know Jared Curtis from a hole in the wall, as a college football fan, this stuff aggravates the hell out of me, that it's going down to this, and you said two different videos? So, I mean, and then you're telling me he played against a level of competition, which isn't even all that great. So what's the big deal? Is it all about the size? Is it the same stuff that plays in the NFL Combine, about the big arm and everything else?
There's a lot of that to it, a lot of projections, a lot of upside. And this is really, you know, there are a couple of different levels. The recruiting sites anoint him as a guy that can ultimately be a program changer. He's someone who has been compared to Matthew Stafford. And so I think, in the one hand, that excites and intrigues a lot of people out there. But I think you bring up another aspect of this, Mike, where in this modern age of college football, where the transfer portal is more prevalent than ever, and you're seeing more kids leave early and not really stick around and develop. What's the point if you're a fan of getting invested and getting excited in this when Curtis, and look, because there's even a recent example of this with Georgia and Justin Fields, who they land him in the 2018 recruiting class, and this was before the transfer portal had blown up like it had. They land Justin Fields, who knew that Jake Fromm was going to be there after Jake Fromm leads Georgia to a national championship. And after 1 year at Georgia, Fields ultimately likes to say, hey, I'd like to go elsewhere. I don't think that I can beat out Jake Fromm for the starting job. And Fields ultimately ends up at Ohio State, a move that worked for him. But I think that was just one of the many examples we've seen in recruiting of, okay, this guy is hyped up to be this program-changing recruit, but then he's here for a year. We don't see him play all that much, and then he leaves. What was the point in getting invested in him in the first place? And I think that's only become more prevalent in college football over these years, as you've seen the transfer portal become bigger and the dissatisfaction that you sort of seem with getting invested in these recruits who just don't stick around for the majority of their college careers.
Is he a program changer, in your opinion?
No, because of where Georgia already is in a year-in, year-out basis. Like he doesn't raise the ceiling of what this program can be, because I think there are fair questions about what Georgia's going to get out of its quarterback play this year in Gunnar Stockton, and they're still seen as a top six, top five team entering this season. So in that regard, he is not someone who changes the face of the program. He is someone who, he's coming in, like, he's going to have to be a big reason they win moving forward because of what revenue sharing might ultimately look like with the House settlement, should that get final approval, and the sort of financial considerations that he's going to command. But he doesn't make Georgia any greater or multiply them to another level, because they already, in my mind, occupy that upper tier of college football right now.
Talking with Connor Riley, guys, from Dog Nation. The other big story is, you know, we've been waiting, like, seemingly for like a year and a half now for the federal judge to make the final ruling on just what the salary cap is going to be, for lack of a better word, for the new NIL deal with the NCAA lawsuit and everything else. Meanwhile, we find out that Nick Saban has been lobbying the president, along with Senator, I still can't get that out of my head, Senator Tommy Tuberville, to perhaps maybe come up with an executive order that could do something to kind of stabilize this. You buying that?
I'm not, and look, that's all flashy, and I get that. I still think that this House settlement is going to be the way that this sort of gets done and at least ironed out. I believe Thursday is the deadline for the NCAA to come forward with a revised settlement plan that allows a grandfathering in of all the walk-ons who potentially lose their jobs if roster caps of 105 go into place. I know that's all very boring and whatnot in there. I think Thursday is the big day to watch with that in terms of the House settlement and that taking the next step forward. As far as the federal government getting involved, as far as Trump putting forth an executive order, I just think that there are too many moving parts, states' rights, state issues in terms of how they view NIL and things like that for an executive order to have all that much power or impact in this regard. And so, you know, look, the federal government time and time again has been pitched to, hey, come help us with this very serious issue that the NCAA seems. And every time Congress has just sort of been like, yeah, there's much bigger things on the priority there. So I think maybe part of this is Trump leaning into that a little bit and saying, oh, this can be an easy PR win. But I'm skeptical that an executive order is either A, going to come, or B, have that great of an impact on the outlook of college football right now.
I agree with you from the standpoint it needs congressional approval. And then at that point, it changes the magnitude of how it can be applied to your point about the states. But I'll say this, the more we talk about it, maybe it lights a fire under some of these people's butts to maybe understand the magnitude of what we're talking about with college football and how it could be for the betterment, Connor, of the sport long term. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for as these discussions are being had. And I'm glad that the president took that conversation with Nick Saban. Now, of course, he was in Tuscaloosa for the commencement, but you know, that's good. I think those kind of conversations need to be had with more people who are involved with it. We've always said, does college football need a czar? And where are you at on that, by the way, when we talk about the changing, you know, landscape of college football? I don't even know if Nick Saban at this point, he's having so much fun on TV, he'd want to do it. But do you still feel that way, or have you ever felt that way? We need, like, a guy that's in charge.
Yeah, college football needs better leadership. And it's going to come down to the schools and the conferences saying, hey, like, I'm okay giving up things. I'm okay taking less and doing it for the greater good of college football as a collective. And I just don't think that we're going to see that, because you see continuously the SEC and the Big Ten continuing to try, and this is just for an example, trying to push for more playoff spots, more automatic bids, get four automatic bids, something that has been picked or kicked around with the college football playoff expansion. And that to me is just another example of, hey, instead of doing what is maybe best for the entire sport, we're going to act in our own best self-interest. And so I understand that aspect. But in terms of looking out for the greater good of college football, because there are a lot of fans out there right now, in my opinion, that are upset with the way that the sport has continued to evolve, and I would say the last 15 years or so. And I just haven't seen anything that leads me to believe that that's where we're headed. But I do agree with you, Carl. We need somebody, a more central force, not the NCAA, because they've clearly just thrown their hands up at it and sort of led into all this. But we do need someone, whether it be a more stringent government body or a single entity, to just focus on football, because football is also, in my mind, impacting so many of the other college sports and college athletics out there.
We know the Wolverines had that dog practice session when they were ready for play Georgia. We never got to see Michigan play Georgia. But Sherrone Moore, they basically cherry-picked the two games they're going to self-discipline themselves over. So he'll get to coach against Oklahoma, Carl and Connor. In your mind, though, Connor, is this Michigan thing tainted? I mean, do you say at the end of the day, 10, 20 years from now, we're going to say those guys cheated to the point where it really was? It was a tainted championship.
To me, no, if only because they won their big games. You know, they beat Ohio State. They beat Alabama. They beat Washington after all that stuff had came out. And Stallions had been removed from the program, and they were under such scrutiny during the course of the season there. I think if this all had come out and this whole scandal came out after the championship had been won, I would personally ask more questions about it. But given it happened early on in the season and it unfolded in the manner in which it did, I think it's okay with me in that regard. But I can certainly understand if someone wants to bring that up, because clearly there was some wrongness done. That's why Michigan, not the NCAA in this state, is electing to suspend Sherrone Moore. And so I think if you want to point that out, I think as a college football fan, you're certainly fair and within your rights to do so.
Great stuff. Connor Riley, you lean in one way. You think they're going to send the jet for this kid at 5:30?
I think Jared Curtis, as we sit here right now, just after 4 o'clock, if I had to make a prediction, I think it would be Georgia.
Okay. Right. We're going to wait to see. Connor, great job. Tell the people where they can follow your stuff.
Yep, you guys can follow me on Twitter at K Connor Riley. We've got a ton of stuff on this Jared Curtis commitment and plenty more with all the news in college football coming.
All right, great job, man. Coming up, Falcons face the NFC West this season. What does that look like? 49ers, Seahawks, Cardinals, Rams are going to tell you what they did in the draft and what they look like, at least right now, when we come back on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Believe it or not, schedule release is right around the corner for the National Football League. Thanks to Connor Riley for stopping by. And before we get into what we're going to tell you about the NFC West, because that's who we're going to face this year with the schedule. Schedule release, by the way, May 15th. We'll find out when and where, but we know who already. Real quick, Mike. Mike and I were talking about this, and Connor does such a good job of not only covering the Dogs, but just, you know, his perspective. When I asked if this kid is a game changer or a program changer, because that's what you want at all these elite schools, Ohio State, right, Alabama, Georgia, you've got all the other ingredients. Do you have a quarterback that can take you over the top and change the complexion of your program, maybe win a couple of natties? And he said, well, you know, Georgia's already there. And here's the thing that just is bugging Mike and I about this whole process. And look, it is what it is. But as a fan, you want me to get overly excited about a guy that we may not even ever see play. And this is why we talk about the NIL portion, or at least the transfer portal portion of what's going on in college football, is broke. It didn't used to be this way. Now, that doesn't mean it's not better. But, Mike, the idea that we used to get excited about the, hey, this kid's coming, we're going to get a chance to see him play. And even if it was one for 1 year and the kid realized it wasn't for him, okay. But now you just brought up Dylan Raiola, who was all the big thing up at Buford, and everybody's like, oh, he's going to Georgia. Didn't play it down for Georgia, and everybody got all excited for nothing.
Yeah, he pulls the rug out from under you, goes back to Nebraska. And it just seems like, you know, and guys, for you new to the show, all four kids getting paid, all four kids making some loot, but we got to have some kind of, I know the guardrails is the phrase which has been used the last couple of years, but there's got to be some kind of stability, because as you said, I mean, why should you care? Get all in. Remember, guys. Remember, like, how people would go bananas on the first National Signing Day.
Absolutely.
Now we have the early signing period. Now everything's kind of been diluted. Then you've got the transfer portal. Heck, FSU had a kid come in December and he was gone in April. You know, so it's just, it's lost. It's like, it's lost its luster. There's no reason, as you said, you know, as a sports fan, whether you're a fan of the school or you went to the school, that emotional connection. You know, why do I care about this? Especially some of the kids, you know, I got to be honest with you. I don't know, as I said earlier, talking with Connor, I don't know Jared Curtis from Adam. But if you've got a kid on the hook from Texas who's playing against better competition, why isn't that kid prioritized over the guy who's got slightly better measurables playing against lesser competition?
Yeah, and my guess is they put the equal amount of time into both because you don't know which way this is going to go. I mean, you can have a sense. But we know this. You know, the kid gets up there and puts on a different hat. It goes different.
And that's, yeah, you know, that's another thing. Look, I get it. They're young people, and it's an exciting time to be able to go take your journey to the next step, which is college. But it also drives me crazy because it's so, you know, it's gotten away the last couple of years from the hat game where you have like three or four hats. And now you've had grown men whose lives depend on your decision, and you're basically treating it like it's a joke. So some of that's going away, but still, the whole process just stinks to the high heaven.
Yeah, I hope they get the best player for them. Like, Georgia, get the best player that you think is going to help the program, and hopefully that's just Jared Curtis' kid. But the process, man, we were sitting here talking about it, and I'm like, eh. I used to get up early, and recruiting has always been a big deal in my life because, again, played high school football in Texas, and it was a big deal. I used to get up early, Mike, to see what the recruiting was looking like the day of signing day, because you knew if we got this guy or he comes here, it's going to change the whole complexion of this thing. And now I got to be honest, I don't do that because I know a kid may sign, he may be gone by the next season. And it's hard for me, and I'm a hardcore guy, man, when it comes to high school and college football. It's hard for me to get excited about that aspect of it when it used to be such a big deal. You would go find the list and look at everything that was going on, and, oh, this kid's coming from Arkansas, and this kid's coming. For what now?
Right. And look, I get it. You know, Stetson Bennett is an amazing story and probably still deserves more credit than he got. But remember, you guys remember how everybody was hanging on Jacob Eason's every word, every thought? Remember we used to joke around about Mark Rick would fly cross country? Like, hey, Jakey, wakey, wakey, eggs and bakey to go have breakfast with him. And at the end of the day, the dude was here. I mean, played basically 1 year. You know, played 18 games, and at the end of the day, it was 16 touchdowns, 8 picks. And he was going to reinvent football. Remember that?
Of course. All right. We're just talking amongst ourselves.
Yeah, just... yes, we are. It was better. But, no, it just seems like you want all this to lead to something that's meaningful. And this young man, like Jared Curtis, says, I signed on the line. He's going to be at Georgia for 4 years. You said you don't even know he's going to make it a semester.
No, no. All right, guys, let's talk real quick. We're going to do more of this as we get close to the schedule release. Big day, by the way. Always is on this show.
You going to go to Berlin if they go? You already got a vacation plan.
Yes, I got a vacation plan.
There's a slim chance we can play the Colts. We'll get to that division later in the month. But right now we're looking at the NFC West.
So Rams and Seattle. Again, we don't know when, right? But we know they're on the schedule. Rams guys were a playoff team and a hair away from potentially going to Super Bowl. Look, I think if the weather's better, they beat Philly. I know you think I'm crazy. They were in the game. The weather played a role in that, but that's football. But it's a 10-17 team that has the youngest defense in the league, and they got their quarterback back, which was the biggest part about this in Matthew Stafford. And then, Mike, you know, they go draft Mykael Williams. So we're going to have to deal with that, just like, you know, they're going to have to deal with Jalen. But I think they improved. They had a lot of picks, but that's the one everybody's talking about. And then the Seahawks, we know the change there, right? They go and they sign Sam Darnold. They move on from Geno, but that was a 10-win football team as well. And so you start to say, all right, those are the two teams I'm really concerned about. But it was a down year for the 49ers because of all the injuries.
Yeah, and again, we said this earlier. I mean, they pick up Mykael Williams, which is a bit of a surprise because, as we said, we thought Jalen would go first. But the way the luck of the draw, and certainly John Lynch, they earmarked this guy to be the next guy to sort of revitalize their edge rushers, which are getting long in the tooth. But, yeah, you got a quarterback, Brock Purdy, that nobody believes in. Certainly we don't. Maybe he does. Kyle Shanahan, that's the only voice that matters. But you've had a guy in their star running back, Christian McCaffrey, can't stay healthy. So, to me, it's almost like, do you do a soft reset if you're the 49ers? Because you're kind of dealing with some tough cap decisions last year. You had linemen, not to mention your skill position guys. You had to figure out how to play it. But the team, which I'm still concerned with the most, when we play the Rams. Because remember, guys, the Rams, if they don't fumble the football, that was the one team that gave the Eagles trouble.
Yes.
In the postseason. Because obviously the Eagles, they took care of business against the Commanders, and the Super Bowl was what it was. But if you remember, the Rams, it was a real heavyweight fight, big plays. That running back, when he fumbled, Williams just wrecked it all. But that Rams team is still, to me, I think they can make one more run, the last ride for Matthew Stafford.
I do too. And I think they win this division this year. I mean, unless Sam Darnold again throws for 35-10, and, you know, the Seahawks defense, I will tell you, it's going to be a challenging week. I'm telling you right now. The draft, I love their draft, and they were really good last year. I think they're going to be better this year. But those are the two teams, Rams, Seahawks. I'm not as worried about the Cardinals and Kyler Murray. They had a decent draft. They went Walter Nolan at 16, Will Johnson at 78, or 47, should I say, Jordan Burchett at 78. I think their draft was okay, but I still feel like they're not quite where the Rams or the Seahawks are. And the 49ers right now is a mystery based on how this team's going to look without some of those weapons we got used to seeing last year, or the last couple of years for that matter. 404-726-0929. But when the schedule's released, my guess is if we have to go out west, they'll probably do that in back-to-back weeks, and maybe the Falcons end up staying out there as they've done in the past. That way, I don't have to make that trek all the way back home. You know, if we have to play them on the road, and maybe it's Seattle and the 49ers in one road trip. I say one, but, you know, two separate weeks. But we'll see. Either way, we're going to get two of those teams at home, two on the road, and we're going to get a chance. I believe that's what it is, if I saw it correctly. But those are our teams as far as the NFC West. You're wondering every year, if you're just, you know, tuning in, the NFL does this, and this is why when we get a chance to play, like, for example, the AFC North, like last year, the Steelers, we don't get a chance to see the Steelers that often.
Right.
And so when they do the division breakdowns of who you will face, it's always fun to look because you know you're going to face you in your division twice, right? Saints, Carolina, obviously in Tampa. But what else does the schedule look like? And, Mike, this year it's the NFC West.
Do you feel Seattle – do you fear Seattle with Sam Darnold? Do you think Sam Darnold's going to – can he do – and, again, do the same thing he did with Minnesota, maybe put some numbers up, and then when it comes crunch time, he spits the bit since we just had the Kentucky Derby?
Yeah, nice reference. Look, I don't fear Seattle. I do think they're going to be a good football team. They feel like they're going to be a better football team. And that's saying a lot because maybe they felt like they were limited with Geno. I don't know. But Geno's going to be starting with the Raiders. So, you know, the crazy thing about that is we'll get a chance to see what happens and plays out there. Raiders won four games last year. There's a lot of work to do. That's why Pete Carroll's doing what he's doing out there. And they're going to have a running game now with Genty, hopefully. But I just feel like, look, the teams that I'm worried about on that schedule as far as the NFC West, right now, Rams and Seahawks. The 49ers, you said it is a soft rebuild, Mike.
Right. Out to San Francisco for folks. Now, again, if it's the right time of year, you Bree's out there. Day-Day takes his wife out there. They do wine country. Maybe hang out in Sausalito, see where the cookies are made. And then they go visit Alcatraz before they reopen it. And then you go watch the 49ers play. Wouldn't that be exciting?
It's a great trip.
Yeah, it really is, man. Minnesota, by the way, we'll talk about that division later. But we have to go back to Minnesota, which was a frigging house of horrors for the Falcons defense this last season.
I'm going to tell you guys, that's a fun trip. If you guys want to go to a away game, that's the fans are nice. It's not Philly.
Yep.
Easy to maneuver. That's a fun trip.
When we went to the Super Bowl in 98, 99, they were so friendly. Yeah. Good luck in that. So beat those Broncos.
Yeah.
You betcha.
We'll see how it plays out, man. Schedule release coming up. We just wanted to break that down a little bit. NFC West, and we'll be breaking down the entire schedule when it is released. Coming up, what do we have in Guy Talk, Mike?
Hey, man, was it a case of too much booty that sank a $4 million luxury yacht off South Beach? And Mike, that's me, meets a real-life Karen. I'll explain. Atlanta, where the players play. And I'll tell you what, man, if you were a player, you were playing in South Beach this weekend. I was just down there for the Formula One Miami Grand Prix. Carl and I were talking about it earlier. It's just a great event. They love it so much. They said it's one of the biggest events, Carl, on the Formula One schedule. And they booked it now through 2041.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It is.
So that's they've extended this thing because it's such a sort of a crossroads between South America and North America for all the fans that you get to meet at this thing. And it's just become this huge event. And they put on a hell of a party. I will say this. Steven Ross may not know how to run a football team, but he knows how to run a Formula One race.
He does. And here's the crazy thing, man. I think if they're able to do it, and I know they're working on it, but if they're able to get a new TV deal here in the States, it's going to expand like crazy. Part of this is, Mike, that they've not been able to secure that the way that they want. And, you know, the ESPN thing is great, but I just feel like, you know what, if it can be the dominant auto sport that we think it is, because it has characters and, you know, it's got all the makings, right? You talk about, you know, the male soap opera. It's got all you're following the teams, the fan bases. It's fun. But I think that's what's going to help grow the sport eventually.
And as we said, Randy Mack was joking around earlier. It's funny, by the way, Randy, he gets his Christmas and birthday present every year from me this weekend because the hat that Randy wants costs $100.
Expensive, yeah.
So anyway, I take the pictures like, is that the one? He's like, that's the one. But yeah, it's just a blast. And as I said to Carl earlier, part of the reason I love Formula One, nothing against NASCAR, because I can go to NASCAR races too, but just meeting people from all over the world who all love cars.
That's right.
And partying. So it's kind of like they all two great things coming together. You would have loved it. Everywhere you look, you saw celebs. DJ Khaled and Travis Scott with this new club, which has become like the new big one, is called Dare in Hollywood. If you're down in Florida way, that's one of the hot spots these days. So you saw those guys. You saw, for instance, you're walking around. You don't get this at Talladega, Carl. You go into the Piper Heidsieck tent, and they're zipping champagne. They're throwing bottles around. And you got like some DJ named Cascade. Chris would know who this is because as Chris knows the difference, Carl, between oots, oots, oots. But there was basically, as you walk around the Hard Rock Stadium, that's you better like your EDM because you get a steady dose of that with a little hip hop thrown in the mix. But that was kind of fun. The cool things that they did this year, and I missed the beginning, so I only got to see it on the TV screen by the time we got in our seats. But about 45 minutes before the race, the folks at Lego made 10 Lego cars, guys, of the 10, there's 20 cars at race, but a car representing each team in the race, and they had two seats in it so the drivers could basically do a parade lap in it. And this thing took 22,000 man hours, Carl, to build these cars. It's unbelievable. They had over 400,000 pieces, and they weigh a lot more than the regular cars themselves. So the guys, and they put a little motor in it, and they've got the regular, like, Pirelli tires, and these guys went around the track, and the crowd was going bananas, because who doesn't like Lego, right? I don't know, we all love Lego as a kid. But unfortunately, this is why, you know, it's almost like that scene in Top Gun. Or I should say, in Days of Thunder, not Top Gun, another Tom Cruise movie, when Tom Cruise is wrecking the rent-a-car with Rowdy Barnes' character, the Michael Rooker. These guys, by the time they got to the third turn, Day-Day, they start knocking into each other, and pieces of Lego are flying all over the track. So there's pictures of how it's literally like these guys are so competitive. The engines in the thing only going 12 miles an hour. It's about 20 kilometers an hour. But even as they're going in slow turns, you see these guys start to, next thing you know, they're taking off pieces of the nose and chunks are missing. But anyway, it's a really cool video. I put it up at Mike Bell ATL. You can check it out because it really, the crowd was just going bananas. And now people are saying, when we get back to Europe, you know, with the schedule, they want to see this every week.
Mm.
They said, Lego, let's make this a thing.
It's a lot.
It's really cool to see these guys, you know, putzing around in these amazing little things that these guys took hours to build, as opposed to just seeing it on the back of a flatbed truck.
Quick question.
That's how they do the drive renders otherwise, Carl.
Quick question for you, Mike. Was there anything in, because I thought about you, because when we went to the movies, they showed the trailer for Brad Pitt's movie. Was there anything about that going on
down there? Yeah, no, they showed a bunch of, you get a lot of sequences and gave it the trailer. Because when we went to the race last year, the race in Miami, you saw Brad Pitt on the front stretch. You saw him in his fire suit. They built this whole team built out. Javier Bardem is the team owner. You got this whole setup. And so there's like a young African-American driver, young driver. He's going to mentor him. When we were in Italy, they had the cars out there. So I can't wait to see this. This movie comes out, I think, is it later this month, right?
I can't remember.
It's Apple, right? Is it Apple?
It's Apple. It's an Apple movie.
It's Apple, yeah. They're saying there will be a theatrical release, though, right?
Okay.
Because I want to see that in an IMAX theater if I can see it.
Yeah.
But that was kind of cool. So anyway, amazing weekend. Great food. You see all the photos, Carl. A mountain of bruschetta yesterday at Noodles. Noodles Panini is this restaurant we go to. If you want information on Florida, I'm your guy. So everything's great. Time to go home. Party's over. Get out to Delta this morning, Carl, for a 6:30 flight.
Okay.
So I get good real estate by the gate. You know, and people eventually start to mill and get there. And so I got my bag, got my carry bag, and I got to pee. And so, there's a lady sitting like one seat across from me. So I look over. I go, hey, ma'am, can you help me out? I said, I'm just going to go hit the men's room. Could you just keep an eye on my bag? No.
Mm.
I go, excuse me? No.
Mm.
I go, no, I just need you to just look. I'm not doing that.
Mm.
I go, I'm just going right. I don't know you. I'm the soul of my father. These are the words that came out of this Karen's mouth. And when I say Karen, yeah, Karen, the short I quit haircut. You know when a woman's basically given up all hope of trying to be sexy? That haircut, frumpy, the kind of people, Carl, that hog that golf course and play that 5-hour round that make other women go back to the tee box instead of just dropping. That woman. So I'm literally, Adelia, I swear, I'm literally, it takes a lot to have me awestruck and to have my mouth and my jaw hit the floor. I go, are you serious? She goes, I don't know you. You hear the announcements? You're supposed to leave your bag unattended.
Oh.
And so there's a big dude, speaking of DJ Khaled, who's sitting behind me, he hears the whole thing. He starts laughing. And so I turn over, I look back, I go, hey, Playboy, can you watch my bag? He goes, I got you, boss. So I go in, I come back. And I'm sitting there, and I go, do you believe that? He goes, bro. He goes, these people, man. It's like, I couldn't, I was like, what? No. Like, literally, I don't know you. I'm like, I did shave this morning. I do have a beard, I am dressed. I'm not homeless. I've just asked you to watch my suitcase for freaking 30 seconds, you know? As Starbucks ran its course,
yes,
right? That's it.
Yes, yes.
So, and by the way, great empanadas, by the way, at the Terminal 2.
Was it?
Yeah, they have this little mom-and-pop place. Great ham, egg, and cheese empanadas. But am I in the wrong there? Because the other guy made no big deal.
No,
sure,
it's not a big deal.
I've watched bags. I've had...
By the way, you've gone through security. There's nothing going on with your bag.
I've had people ask me to watch. I really didn't even think twice about it.
Yeah, you would have acted... I mean, she was acting like you dropped your bag off at the curb. And, I don't know who you are.
But you should see the sourpuss. I mean, this was like the quintessential. I mean, whenever you see those videos that go viral of the Karen with the HOA or the Karen somewhere.
Oh, I'm familiar.
I mean, oh, my. Yes, I know you are very familiar.
Yes.
I was blown away. I was like,
maybe she was offended by the fact that instead of asking for her number, you asked for her to watch her back.
No. She wasn't. I believe I'd have been barking up the wrong tree on that one, hotshot. That would have been presumably from a false assumption. All right, man. So that was my weekend.
Great.
Fun and shenanigans. Oh, by the way, I told Carl, if they do it the same weekend next year, you guys, if you need some trip advice for how to get race tickets and try to find the best spot, just hit me up on Twitter at MikeBellATL. Carl's put them up, Sea Dukes. It used to be called the Shell Air and Sea Show, but now it's just this big Air Dot Show. So the Navy SEALs, the F-22s, the Blue Angels. Holy cow. So just hanging out in Fort Lauderdale, and all of a sudden, Carl, you got planes like zoom right over your head in formation. It's a really neat weekend. Hey, other things that happened this weekend down there, a lot of influencers. And I will say the worm is starting to turn. Even at the Miami Grand Prix, when they would show somebody on the big screen and they would describe her as an influencer, people would start booing the big screen. So maybe people are finally fed up with these shallow people that bring nothing to life whatsoever other than clicks on social media. Well, a bunch of influencers, I got the photo up at Mike Bell ATL, went for a ride on a boat. off of South Beach, a $4 million Lamborghini yacht.
Woo!
Which is now getting towed, and it's basically three quarters of it were underwater and having to be salvaged. Coast Guard and
that ain't cheap, by the way.
A Good Samaritan boat. Got to imagine the Good Samaritan boat. Yeah, there's 30 hot chicks in like thongs. I'll help. Quick, throw the fishing tackle overboard. We got to save those women. So nobody was hurt, which is the good news. But apparently the important things had to be saved. So as the Coast Guard is trying to rescue these women, oh, my God, save my phone. Phones and MacBooks and apparently a $350 bottle of Clase Azul Gold tequila was more important than helping to save some of the people that may have drowned.
You know how much I paid for that bottle?
So that was this was going on. Take a look at the story I got up there, as I said, on my Twitter page at MikeBellATL. So you get all these, like, you know, all those same goofy, vacuous people who look like the Kardashians all stranded on a boat as it's sinking right off of South Beach. Hey, man, let's get back to sports. One of the great stories of the weekend, other than Carl and I missing out on the trifecta and winning big money on the Kentucky Derby.
Although that has happened in the past.
I know. I haven't won the Kentucky Derby in 10 years.
It's been a while.
That damn, I shouldn't have bet the Japanese horse. And by being I mean, as the horse was raised in Japan.
Yeah. I like Luxor Cafe. I thought that was going to be one of the surprises.
And that's one of American Pharaoh's sons. It's a sire of a Triple Crown winner. That's why I was trying to. I had a plan. It went to crap. These guys had a plan. The St. Louis Blues were just under 2 minutes away from advancing to the next round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Brutal. And all of a sudden, the old Atlanta Thrashers, the Winnipeg Jets, started doing things. Take a listen as Winnipeg comes back in one of the most amazing comebacks in NHL history. On your right.
Vlad Nemestikov. He shoots off the wall. On a foul. His stick being held by Folk. Shen moves it to the line where it's kept in. Moved around by the Jets. Nemestikov shooting. They score!
The building is shaking, they said on TV. This is our old Atlanta Thrashers.
Jets are within one. It was Thomas as Vilardi desperate to get it. Under 10 seconds to go. The Jets with an opportunity. Ehlers misfires, passes across the shot. They score! Can you believe it? My goodness!
I mean, the idea of scoring with 3 seconds left in regulation. You're St. Louis. You're on easy street. You got less than 2 minutes to go in the game.
Crazy.
And again, as we said, Nemestikov had the first goal, and then Cole Perfetti with that goal right there. So now they go to overtime. They got all the momentum. First overtime. They can't get a goal. Now we go to second overtime in Winnipeg.
Now Lowry back out to the point. Pionk. Here's Fleury. Hard pass down low. Connor back up the boards for Pionk. Pionk shoots. Score! The Jets win it! On the deflection! The Winnipeg Jets will move on!
Now, again, we'll all have a soft spot for our old Atlanta Thrashers, but man, isn't that great? I saw that video, and people were going bananas when you saw it again this morning on SportsCenter. Even folks on the plane probably watched it 3 or 4 times, Carl, on their computer. Isn't that a hell of a story?
It is.
St. Louis, I mean, I don't even know if this guy survived that. How you bounce back from something like that. And they were deflections. Some of it was luck of the draw, but you put the puck on the net, Carl. Good things happen.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. I hope we get hockey back sooner than later. Hey, coming up, are there concerns about one of our picks? According to some draft analysts, the answer is yes. And we'll tell you why when we come back on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.